Blog Talk Radio.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah!
I want to know if everybody ready.
Yeah!
All right, here we go. Everybody, get on up and do your stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said everybody, get on up and do your stuff. You better get up. You got to be tough when you do your stuff. Hey!
Hey, everybody. Hey, happy Monday. Welcome to Congress College. My name is Elizabeth Christ, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes on this radio show where, if you guessed it from the title, yep, we are all about Congress. Congress College talks about Congress actually twice weekly. On the Monday show, which of course is the show you're listening to right now, this is when we outline the week, and what that means is we talk about literally what will be coming up in the Senate of the United States and what will be coming up in the House of Representatives. And then, of course, on the Friday show, same time slot, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, this is when we recap the week and we talk about what actually got done. What got done on the Senate floor? What got done on the House floor? Did you like what your representatives did for you during the week? You know, I say this all the time, and I know Bob from Connecticut can probably echo it. Thanks for listening, Bob. We have the greatest representative government in the world, bar none. But you know what? It only works if we pay attention to what our representatives are doing. What is your member of the House doing? What's your senator doing? Are they listening to you? Are they representing you well? And that's the point of doing Congress College twice weekly. On the Monday show, you figure out what's going on. And on the Friday show, you figure out if they did it and if they did it well and were you represented well. That's the million-dollar question. That's what I hope everybody can answer after listening to the Monday and the Friday show of Congress College. I also want to say I do the show in part so that folks can familiarize themselves with gradegov.com. And, of course, gradegov.com lets you grade a member of Congress. How about your member of Congress? I see John Krupe joined. Hey, John, happy Easter, happy spring to everybody. What would you give your member of Congress? What would you give your House member? Would you give him or her a B, a D, an F? How about your senator? What would you give your two United States senators? Go over to GradeGov, and I would appreciate it if you pop over there, grade your member of Congress, and also let friends and family know about GradeGov.com. I would really appreciate it. All right, we're basically done with the housekeeping. Let's get started. What is going on? You know, Congress is back, but you know what? Here's the deal. Actually, the Senate is back. The House of Representatives, they're staying out another week. They're not going to be back until next Tuesday, which I believe is the 12th, April 12th. But the Senate is back. I'm hearing from Bob in the chat room that there's some audio issues. I don't know if it's cracking. I'll try to figure it out, guys. Thanks a lot for letting me know. Gosh, I hate that when that happens. It's very, very frustrating. I know it's frustrating for you all. But the Senate is back. It's starting this week. You know, let me just start out with a few notes to talk about. Senator Burr, he's a Republican from North Carolina. He's also chairman of the Intelligence Committee. He is now zeroing in, honing in on the Islamic threats around the world. He's urging the president to take them more seriously. He's given a couple of big speeches where he's telling the president, engage our allies. How about our intelligence community? Use them and, of course, use our military. Come up with a serious plan to defeat ISIS, or ISIL, as they call it. I don't know if that falls on deaf ears. It seems like it does. It seems like this president doesn't seem to want to even recognize the threats as Islamic threats. He doesn't want to mention that. But Senator Burr, the Republican from North Carolina, is trying to raise a little more awareness, especially what happened in Brussels. So we'll see if that goes anywhere. Let me also tell you, Senator McConnell, let me tell you what he did today. He and 42, I believe, other United States Republican senators filed a brief at the Supreme Court in preparation for their hearing a case dealing with Obama administration's immigration executive orders. They're hearing this case on April 18th. And basically what happened was that the Fifth Circuit ruled, and I'm going to quote, the Immigration and Nationality Act flatly does not permit the reclassification of millions of illegal aliens as lawfully present in the United States. But we also know that's what the president did. He used an executive order, executive action, whatever you want to call it. He changed regulations. He had his regulators change regulations, and they redefined some words so that he has basically reclassified millions of illegal aliens and made them lawful. And the Fifth Circuit said, can't do that. And it's clearly an effort to circumvent the legislative process. Senator McConnell, with 42 other United States senators, filed a brief at the Supreme Court. They're going to hear the case on April 18th. And actually, what is at stake in my mind? Why do you care? Why should we care? Because this is a huge, huge overreach of the president's authority. He's been doing this on steroids. I know John and Bob know that. If you listen to Congress College at all in the last couple of years, you'll know that this president, this administration, takes regulatory action on steroids. They redefine words in magic ways to get an old law, a law that is sitting on the books now, to mean something completely different than what it was originally intended to mean when the Congress passed it. Again, why do you care? Because Congress is your voice, folks. Congress is my vote, my voice. It's part of our representative government. It's part of when we elect our congressmen and women, when we elect our senators, they're supposed to go to Washington and basically talk for us. We're supposed to stay back home, don't live in Washington, live where we live, raise our children, go to work, and be productive people in society, but they are supposed to be the ones talking for us, representing us in Washington, D.C. So if they're being circumvented all the time, if they're being basically bowled over by this administration, doing whatever it is this administration wants to do, they don't go to Congress for these changes in laws. They just make them. And where they get whatever authority, if you want to call it that, you know, agencies throughout the federal government, and there's hundreds and thousands of agencies, have the authority to update current laws, laws that are on the books. They could be 50 years old. It doesn't matter. That law is still on the books. They have the authority to update them to make them sort of fit the times. Here's a good example. I don't want to bore you, but I don't want to get in the minutia. The 1961 Wire Act was passed in part to make sure that everybody knew it was against the law in the United States to gamble over the phone, to place a bet with a bookie. When the internet showed up in the late 80s or 90s, the regulators used the Wire Act already on the books to say it's also illegal to gamble on the internet because the internet, in theory, uses phone lines, Wire Act. So that's a way of, because the intent of Congress back then was to say, we don't want people gambling illegally. There's an example. They updated the definition of wire to include telephone wire. And of course, when you include telephone wire, you included the internet. That's what I mean by allowed to update laws when necessary. This president has our regulators on steroids, working 24/7. Figuring out all these different things. There's a million laws on the books. They can redefine, here's another one, redefine work. Remember, welfare to work, passed during the Clinton administration, vetoed it twice. Senator Dole, Senator Lott, Speaker Gingrich all worked very hard to get that bill in place. Senator Dole had governor after governor after governor after governor come through his office and ask in individual meetings over months and months and months. So, governor, what works in your state? What part of the welfare program in your state works? What doesn't work? Had all of these hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of meetings until he finally put together a bill, Welfare to Work, that once it was signed into law, after 4 or 5 years, a third of those on welfare were off of welfare. Amen. Amazing. Well, guess what the Obama administration did? Redefined the definition of work. Because the original law said you have to be actively trying to find work. You have to actively try to be employed. Either retrain yourself, be retrained by government programs that will retrain you and start looking for work. And you had to prove you were looking for work in order to stay on the welfare rolls. And a lot of people, that was a lot of work in itself to prove that you were looking for work. They might as well go to work. And they did. The Obama administration took that law, twisted it into a pretzel by simply redefining the word work. You can go to the YMCA and exercise. You want to crunch some abs? You want to get on a leg machine and press a couple hundred pounds? That's considered work. So obviously the welfare roles under the Obama administration are not shrinking. They're growing by the hour. So that's what I mean by this president taking laws already in the books, turning them into a pretzel to get what he wants. Well, he did that with the immigration law. The Fifth Circuit ruled that that was a no-no. And Senator McConnell, the majority leader in the Senate, along with most of the United States Republican senators, have filed a brief in the Supreme Court because they're going to hear the case and find out if they're going to agree with the Fifth Circuit Court. Basically, once the Fifth Circuit Court agreed that the president had gone overboard, they dropped him. He's in a holding pattern. He can't now defer action on these 11 million aliens and give them legal status. He's in sort of a holding pattern. And then the Senate is going to get all sorts of pressure to try to do something with the Supreme Court nomination. And, of course, that is Merrick Garland. Take a listen to this clip. This is a little more than 2 minutes on will the Senate move on the Supreme Court nomination. Here you go.
Today I am nominating Chief Judge Merrick Brian Garland to join the Supreme Court. Tomorrow Judge Garland will travel to the Hill to begin meeting with senators one-on-one. I simply ask Republicans in the Senate to give him a fair hearing.
Senator Grassley and I made it clear that we don't intend to take up a nominee or to have a hearing.
During the silence, they're showing some clips of senators saying, Senator Grassley saying, he'll meet with him, for example. And we've found out that Senator Kirk will have a meeting with the nominee this week. And Senator Collins has said that she thinks the Senate should consider the nomination. Pat Toomey.
The Senate Judiciary Committee should seriously consider not scheduling confirmation hearings on the nomination until after the political campaign season is over.
To now hear all this talk about the Biden rule, it's frankly ridiculous. There is no Biden rule. It doesn't exist.
I think the next president should make the pick, and I think they shouldn't go forward.
No matter what? What if he picks your sister?
Then I would say the same thing.
Are you completely ruling out a lame duck scenario if Hillary Clinton wins the November election?
Yes. We're not going to be confirming a judge to the Supreme Court under this
even
president.
If it means Hillary Clinton nominates somebody even more liberal than Merrick Garland.
Well, it's my hope. It'd be hard to be more liberal than Merrick Garland, but it's my hope that she will not be making the appointment.
The Constitution says the president should nominate, and we should provide advice and consent. We should go through the process the Constitution has already laid out. Just man up and cast a vote.
Okay, that last person you heard was Senator Kirk, the Republican from Illinois, and he's going to meet with the nominee this week. He's in a tough reelection bid, folks. Pat Toomey, the Republican from Pennsylvania, also said he would meet with him sometime soon. What do Pat Toomey and Senator Kirk have in common? Besides the Republican senators, they're up for re-election. They're up for re-election in blue states, in Illinois and Pennsylvania. Remember, there are 24 Senate Republicans trying to win the prize, if you will, to come back and continue to be senators next year. They're nervous. Pat Toomey's nervous. Senator Kirk is nervous. Remember, 24 Senate Republican seats are up for re-election. 7 of those seats are in states where Obama won. So we'll see. We'll see. The pressure will build. And by the way, the Biden rule, when you heard then Senator Biden say, I don't think the Senate should act on this Supreme Court nominee. You know when that was said? June of an election year. June. And basically Senator McConnell is saying in April, 60 days earlier, we're not going to act on it. So it was okay for Senator Biden to say it back in the day. It was in the 90s, 92. It was okay for Senator Biden to say it. Oh, no, by the way, now he says there was never any Biden rule. It's okay for him to say it and demand it. Remember, he was chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee for many, many, many years. Him saying that is huge. But, of course, now he's almost saying he didn't say it. But he said it in June of a presidential election year. We should not confirm the nomination. And he's chairman. He was at the time chairman of the Judiciary Committee, or had been. So just keep that in mind, folks. Let me tell you another thing going on in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Tuesday, they're going to have a hearing on the nuclear Iran deal. Why? Attorney General Loretta Lynch has accused Iran of hacking our financial markets. And you've got Marco Rubio, senator from Florida, and Mark Kirk, the same senator from Illinois, saying that they think the White House should exclude Iran from our entire financial system. They shouldn't have anything to do with our U.S. financial system. The banks should block them. And they do know how to do that. They know how to block bad actors, if you will. And the reason is because they're known money launderers. So we'll have to see. We'll just have to see. What else will the Senate be doing? They're going to start working on appropriations bills, trying to figure out funding levels for agencies. You're going to start seeing a lot of issues. We're probably going to talk about this Friday. A lot of issues coming out of those hearings because they're going to want to cut pieces in the legislation. They're going to want to cut agencies from being able to do some of this stuff. Some of the stuff that the president uses his agencies, as we talked about, to do a lot of mischief, these appropriators are going to want to use the appropriations process to cut, and they're going to make political statements out of this. They're going to make political statements having political votes on the Senate floor when possible. And also, remember this, the Senate and the House have not done a budget resolution. They'll do that late spring. And remember, budget resolutions don't go to the president. They act as a blueprint for the budget of our federal government. They fill out the numbers, the amount of money that each agency is supposed to get, and then the appropriators figure out basically how to dole it out. But when the appropriators start dealing with the bills, they're going to start cutting programs that the president has used on steroids to over-legislate or legislate, period. Remember, we have a representative government. Remember, it's your House member. It's your senators that are supposed to be writing laws. He's supposed to implement the laws. Use his agencies, use the federal government departments to implement the laws, assuming they're signed into law by him. So you're going to see the appropriators start doing that. But as they're doing a budget resolution, you might see a lot of these political votes occur then. It's a usually an amazing time to watch the Senate and the House and figure out what they believe are political hot buttons, because they usually have a vote in the House and the Senate on the floor dealing with those hot button issues. Why is that? To create 30-second commercials Now, see, the Democrats will do the same thing Republicans are doing. And remember, in the Senate, for example, there's 24 Senate Republicans up for re-election. I hate to keep saying that, but I'm going to keep saying it, versus only 10 Democrats. So the budget resolution will be a long one, a painful one, and probably happen in the next 4 to 6 weeks. All right, let's switch over for a second, and well, actually the last few minutes, most of it. The State Department is set to release emails of Hillary Clinton's chief of staff, top staffer, one of her top staffer, Emma Abedin. She's Anthony Weiner's wife. And there are up to 29,000 pages of emails from 2009 to 2000, and I believe it's 13. That's a lot of emails. That's a lot of conversation. Emma Abedin, as I said, a top staffer of Hillary Clinton, met when the Clintons were, when President Clinton was the president and she was an intern. She met the first lady in the hallway and said she was struck by her right away. I guess very impressed with her right away. So fast forward, she kind of climbed the ladder as a young staffer, and now she's, from 2009 to 2013, she had a top role in the State Department. So the State Department's going to release those emails. And then Benghazi report will get them also. But 29,000 pages? Man, that's a lot. Take a listen to this. This is her on the radio very recently.
I'm thrilled to be on. Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
You know, almost 2 years ago when we started dreaming of doing this podcast, you were, I want to say, like one of the first people that we ever thought we wanted to talk to. So this is kind of momentous.
I'm curious about what that felt like to just know it was, it's out there in that way.
It's terrifying. I confess I have not read anything that has become public, but I think the story that I was most, I found most interesting was a woman, and I don't remember any of the details, but a woman who said she didn't support Hillary until she read all of her emails. She saw what a warm, caring, thoughtful, determined person she was. But I can't, it's something I can't really think about because I can't even imagine what's in those emails, but I'm sure I would probably be mortified. I have no idea. Well, I haven't read any of them.
There you go. There you go. She's mortified. She thinks she'll be mortified. 29,000 pages, I would bet so. And then the Benghazi report from the House side. They say they're going to release the report. This comes from Congressman Pompeo. He's a Republican from Kansas, by mid to late summer. They did tens of thousands of interviews, went through documents, a lot of documents that no other committee in the Senate or the House has. So they'll release that by probably the end of the summer. Will that affect Hillary Clinton? Will Emma Abedin's emails affect her? You know, Emma Abedin in that report said she was excited that somebody read Hillary Clinton's emails and found her to be kind and therefore is a supporter. I think it's going to work in reverse for most of people that hear them and see them and read them. I just would be shocked if it's helpful at all. It can't be helpful. It just can't be. Okay, let's go to presidential politics real fast. June 7th is the California primary. And up for grabs for Ted Cruz, up for grabs for Donald Trump is 172 delegates. And Ted Cruz thinks he's going to win that. And therefore, really, really, really scare Donald Trump. Scares him so much now that Donald Trump skipped his new grandson's bris to go to Wisconsin. Because there's 42 delegates up for grabs in Wisconsin. He's worried about Ted Cruz getting those. He's getting worried, folks. I think that's why he had such a bad week last week with his verbal faux pas, his fumbles. He's getting worried. And then you got Hillary and Bernie. They're duking it out on when to have their next debate. The Sanders spokesman absolutely said, I do not want to have it the 14th or the 15th during NCAA finals. So I think they're about to agree to April 10th. That seems like that's the date that those two camps are willing to agree. So presidential politics, still churning away. Donald Trump, still churning away. Spending money now is in Wisconsin, going to Wisconsin often. He was basically going to blow it off. You know, on Friday, I'm going to read part of a blog post from a friend of mine, Keith Hennessy. Keith used to work in the United States Senate, but he also worked in the George Bush White House, Council on Economic Advisors. Keith has a pretty good piece on Donald Trump. I'm going to get into that a little bit on Friday. All right, I do this at every airing of Commerce College. Hey, guys, get your paper, get your pencil. We are about to read the president's daily schedule for today. Are you ready? He gets the daily briefing. At 11:10, he has a bilateral meeting with NATO General Secretary. 12:30, he's got lunch. I think it's pathetic that he puts his lunch on his schedule. And 2:55, he has a reception for Greek Independence Day. That is it, folks. That's all that's on the schedule. You know, I do this to let people know how pathetically thin this schedule is, how light this schedule is, how basically this president does next to nothing during an average day. And if you don't believe me, if you think I'm picking on the guy, if you think I'm just way too biased, Google your favorite past president. How about Bill Clinton? And then pick today's date, as long as it's not a Saturday or a Sunday. Today's date in the middle of that presidency, or do it towards the end of his presidency if you want to. If you want to be absolutely positively fair, and I can guarantee almost without not even looking that Bill Clinton's schedule will start out something like 7:30, 8 o'clock, breakfast in the family quarters, 8 or 8:30, meeting with his chief of staff, 8:30 to 9, meeting with Senate leaders, 9:30 to 10, meeting with House leaders, 10 to 11, meeting with chairman of committees, meeting with House members, meeting with senators, on and on. It will have something every 30, 40 minutes from 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning until 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. I used to look at the president's daily schedule all the time. Many presidents, many years. First of all, I don't ever remember any of them including lunch on their presidential daily schedule. This guy has three things. The daily briefing, if he doesn't do that, he's not even our president as far as acting like it. And then a reception for Greek Independence Day. I love the Greek, but boy. Okay, so anyway, I've said my piece on the president's daily schedule. Thanks again for tuning into Commerce College. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you come back on Friday. Tell your friends, tell your family. If you miss any of them, you know they're archived on graygov.com. In the meantime, I'm going to leave you with a Bee Gees song. It kind of fits with some of the stuff we were talking about. Jive talking. Here you go. Enjoy. Have a great week, and I will talk to everybody on Friday. Thanks a lot. Oh,